Planet Nibiru was a wandering planet. It had been expelled from the star system that it had come from. For some reason unknown, it was blasted out of there. It became a wandering planet. In its trajectory, through time, through its wandering years, headed towards our solar system. Our larger planets, with their gravitational forces, bent the trajectory of this planet called Nibiru. Its trajectory was bent. And was captured to a point where the gravitational forces pulled it in towards our solar system, to the point where it crossed right through the solar system on the outside of Mars. It just so happened that there was a planet there on the outside of Mars that the Anunnaki from Nibiru, they called that planet Tiamat. Tiamat had existed there until Nibiru comes by and four of its moons slammed right into the heart of Tiamat, causing the planet to crack right in half. Half of that planet was knocked to the inside of Mars, where it found a new orbit. The other half of the planet, Tiamat, was smashed into bits as the four moons and Nibiru passed right through, smashing it. And those bits became the asteroids. And those asteroids soon formed a ring. They called it the Hammered Bracelet. The Hammered Bracelet we call the asteroid belt. Now, the asteroid belt, these pieces are scattered in every direction. Just as though you dropped a rock into water, the drops would scatter in every direction. Same principle. So this asteroid belt became a permanent fixture out there. The other half of Tiamat, now called Ki, or we call it Earth, it settles into its orbit. And it has a huge gash in it, a giant hole knocked right out of it. All those pieces that once were part of that planet now is nothing but a tremendous gaping gash. Through time, and what was left, by the way, was a landmass towards the top. If you take a globe, pause this, if you have a globe, and go grab it. Now, when you look at the globe, turn it upside down, and what you'll see is nothing but water. Well, that water just drained and down towards the lowest point, which was that gaping hole. also started drooping down towards the gaping hole. This landmass, science called Panacea, started to break apart. If you take the land, the continents, and you push it upwards, you'll see how it fits together, all those pieces. Of course, some are underwater now, but all those pieces would fit together into one landmass. Again, Panacea. And as that landmass would drift towards that gaping hole, as water did, moving towards the lowest point, the landmass cracked and different continents were formed. And this caused platelets to be formed. So these platelets move today on Earth. They just rub up against each other and cause, in effect, earthquakes, what have you. Anyway, it's all from this continental drift, science would call it. So now, through that continental drift and through eons of time of water draining down to the hole, that gaping hole and all of the cracks fill up with water. And the continental drift slows down now that it's filled with water. And you have what it is today. You have the continents, you have the oceans. Now look at that. That is a huge piece of Earth that is missing, filled with water. Where are those pieces of Earth? It's on the outside of Mars. It's smashed into bits. Now, a strange thing about those bits we call the asteroid belt, it has the same rare minerals as Earth has. It's composed of the same substances that you find on Earth. Exact same thing, because it was once part of what was called Tiamat. Earth plus the asteroid belt equaled Tiamat. So, science thinks that if we could go to these pieces of the asteroid belt, we could mine it and come back with rare minerals, even gold and silver and everything else. The Anunnaki needs gold. Their planet has a hole in its protective layers, and the atmosphere of their planet is slowly leaking. Anyway, they figured they could patch that hole with gold processed down into some kind of a powder or flake or some kind of substance that they could use to fill the hole, fill that gap with this substance, which would hold their atmosphere in, solving the problem of the leak. The only problem is they need to find a big supply of gold. They could not find it on any planet in our solar system until finally someone named Alalu, and you might check Alalu out, came to Earth, discovered the gold, radioed back, and here comes the process of mining gold. And of course, of colonizing Earth, where the gods came down. Now, planet Nibiru once it was grabbed by our solar system, it crossed right through. Its path crossed right through on the outside of Mars and was bent again by the planets until it finally had an elliptical orbit. It is captured by our solar system, and Nibiru forms an elliptical orbit where it goes way out, way past Pluto, and then back again, crossing through the solar system on the outside of Mars. Every time it crosses through, it causes the planets to wobble, or there's an effect, you know, on the gravitational settlements of each planet, causing Earth perhaps to flip on its axis. Scientists believe Earth has flipped many times on its axis. Anyway, it takes about 3,600 of our years for Nibiru to orbit once. So Nibiru, the beings on Nibiru called the Anunnaki, they would age 1 year, while the beings on Earth would age 3,600 years. Wow. So to any being on Earth, the Anunnaki, aging just 1 year, they must be immortal. No one could live 3,600 years to see. Not today, anyway. To witness this one orbit and what happens when it crosses through. Now, Earthlings, looking at the Anunnaki, with the Anunnaki standing 14 and more feet tall, huge, extremely strong, living forever, much taller, much stronger, much smarter. They just and seemingly live forever. The Earthlings are somewhere around 5 feet, maybe even as tall as 6 feet. Now, I don't refer much to the Bible here with this website, but in this case, I'm going to refer you to Genesis 6. And if you'll bear with me a second, it states, according to this one Bible, I'm sure the wording is different in yours, but it's the same story. It states, when men began to increase in number on earth, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. And then it states a little further down, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, the men of renown. Heroes of old. Well, that would be the first kings, the first leaders on earth. The demigods, who were giants, who were much taller, stronger, smarter, faster, and lived much longer than the Earthling. Once the Earthling inhabited the Earth, once man began to increase in number and had daughters. Now, these Anunnaki who came down, these sons of God, who came down with a bunch of workers, I think 900 in total, 300 doing the mining work, gathering the gold, sending it up to the Eden, the land between the rivers, today Tigris and Euphrates, which enters into the Persian Gulf. Anyway, they would ship it up to the Eden where the ore would be smelted down to pure gold, lessening the weight by quite a bit. And as they gathered a good shipment of this gold and other rare minerals, they would ship it to Mars. And in Mars, they develop warehousing, and they would store it there until their planet, Nibiru, comes by just outside of Mars, where they could dump it off much easier. The lightened load, the pure gold, they could ship it in a much shorter distance to Nibiru, drop it off there, pick up whatever supplies and equipment needed back on Earth, and they'd bring it from Nibiru to Mars, Mars back to Earth. These shippers were called the Ajiji, the space truckers of the gods. So you've got basically 300 of the Anunnaki doing the mining in South Africa, that is, after they pick up the easy gold on the surface of the earth. They're doing the mining while 300 is in the Eden setting up the base for the colony. And all the work required for their existence on earth while they get what they came for. So they had to set up farming and then dig the canals and the irrigation needed for those farms. They had to bring seeds from their planet and establish grains and vegetables. They had to set up pens for the animals that they would slaughter, the cows and the sheep. This was the meat supply, preferably sheep, but they also had millions of cows. And as you could find in a text on the Ur page, where the cattle pens were in Ur, there's a million of them, so this text says. Anyway, the planet Nibiru crosses through our solar system. This is symbolized by a cross. The cross symbol is simply a symbol of Nibiru, the planet. You'll find this cross symbol being kept alive through history, where the Knights Templar used it. They used it for the sheets that they wore. It was part of their dress. It's also known as the Armenian cross. It's known as the Jerusalem cross. It's known as the plus sign in mathematics. This symbol has been kept alive quite possibly by the Masons, who have the knowledge of the Anunnaki. Anyway, it's been kept alive through all these years. As you see through the slideshow, there are exhibits of the planet diagrams where it would cross through our solar system, turn around and go way out into space and come back. Science has discovered that there must be a planet way out there past Pluto. This planet must be part of our solar system. And so they've named that planet Planet X. Well, we know it to be Planet Nibiru, the home of the Anunnaki, where the sons of God came down to Earth, colonized it, and started mining the gold. So you can see through the slideshow how Nibiru passes through, collided into Tiamat, and forms the asteroid belt. And what remains of that planet Tiamat becomes Earth, now located on the inside of Mars, the third planet from the sun. There's a text concerning this called the Enuma Elish, the creation story. It's a Babylonian text, a rewrite of a much earlier text, where the Anunnaki are trying to give us their history. Anyway, as you scroll down on the page, you'll see the symbols of planet Nibiru. The first symbol you come across is the 12-pointed star. This symbol represents the 12th star in our solar system. The 9 planets, the sun, the moon, and Nibiru, the 12th star. So when you see a 12-pointed star, such as our clock, when you see a 12-pointed star, you're looking at a symbol of the planet Nibiru. In different ways, that symbol has been kept alive throughout the years. You can see here an artifact where the giant is sitting. Two earthlings are standing before him, male and female. And the 12-pointed star is in the sky. Nibiru is above them. And on, you'll see symbols of the 12-pointed star used today and used back when in the ancient artifacts from Mesopotamia. You'll see, as I scroll through that, by the way, if you put your cursor on the picture of an artifact, it halts the scrolling of the text or of the artifacts. It'll stop it. Also, a brief description will pop up. Anyway, you can stop that just simply putting your cursor on it. And you can fast forward or rewind it by clicking on the arrows. You'll see that even George Washington used that symbol on flags. The Masons use that symbol all over the place. The Hindu used the symbol. Different nations, such as Taiwan, used the symbol in their flag. That 12-pointed star is used all throughout our history in various ways. As you further scroll down, you'll see the cross symbol, the planet that crosses through. You'll even see an artifact where you have a flying planet, a circle, with a 12-pointed star that's flying through. Anyway, you see this cross symbol on many ancient artifacts. A cross symbol, of course, was used by the Knights Templar, and then others, as I had mentioned before. In many ways, that cross symbol exists today. You can see it here as you scroll through ancient texts and things such as cathedrals and whatever else the Masons may have built. But it was kept alive by the Masons. Okay, there are also ancient zodiacs that you can find. A strange thing, how did Greece and Egypt and so forth, how would they know about these planets? How would they know about something they can't even see? Very strange. So, as you study this, I suggest you read the Enuma Elish. I tried to make it easier to understand by color coding and putting descriptions in parentheses and different things like that. I would suggest you read that more than once. It took me many times. I tried to make it easy for you to understand that Apsu is the sun, Mumu is Mercury, and so on and so forth. I list them all. Okay, Marduk is their planet Nibiru. This is obviously a Babylonian text, where Marduk inserts himself on everything. You see the solar system, the planets there, and their sizes and their positions. That will give you an idea of the 12th star, Nibiru, and its size in comparison to the other planets. And when you compare it to the inner planets, you'll see how much smaller they actually are. Earth, much smaller. Mars, much smaller. And so on and so forth. And you see the asteroid belt. Now, flying through that asteroid belt, coming from Nibiru on the outside, flying past those planets, and then flying through the asteroid belt, past Mars, and finally onto Earth. That's a dangerous thing, crossing through that asteroid belt. And they called it, originally, that was the forbidden zone. They didn't really know what was inside the forbidden zone. They just know it was forbidden, too dangerous to go to travel to. But all these outer planets had no gold. At some time in their history, they got disgusted with not repairing the damage to their planet. And a particular prince by the name of Alalu became totally disgusted to the point that he killed the existing king, claimed himself to be the new king, and the reason he did so is because he wanted somebody to save their planet. He figured it would be him. So he kills the king and he decides, we'll go to work looking at the inner planets. Well, that didn't go well. That was a coup. That was murder. The council of Anunnaki were not happy. And at the same time, another prince by the name of Anu was also claiming succession to the king, and he stated his right to the throne. They decided Anu was probably had a better claim than Alalu, and Alalu is wanted for murder. Well, Alalu, who owned a spacecraft, a flying saucer, he grabs it. It's armed with nuclear weapons, 8 of them, I believe. And he takes off running for his life. And he decides he'll go where they can't go to get him. And that would be inside the Forbidden Zone. As he approaches the asteroid belt, he uses one of his missiles to blast a hole that he could travel through. And so he does so. And he ends up landing in the Persian Gulf, comes to shore on Earth. And there he looks around and he discovers that there's gold there. There's also food growing on trees and in an atmosphere that will work for them with no problem. He decides this is the answer to all their problems. And so he radios back to Nibiru, informs him where he's at and what he's found, claiming once again kingship. Now you can find the rest of this story on Alalu's page. I'll try to explain most of these pages to you, if not all of them. Thanks for listening.